Andy, welcome back. The trilogy, man.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure. And I appreciate you, so I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's for me, it's a pleasure having somebody on to the podcast one time. Two times is great, three times is insane. I think I've only had maybe two or three other guests that have had multiple episodes with me. And usually that is a reflection on me where I'm like, yeah, the person that I get to have on, we have a good chats and it's fun conversations. And there's things that we can usually build upon or just kind of like reconnect later on and maybe update certain things or, elaborate more on topics we didn't get to touch on as much. So I appreciate you being open and willing to come back on the show because I think the last two chats that we've had have been phenomenal. I'll link those in the show notes if you haven't listened to our other two. It's been all about the liver. So it'll be fun to kind of continue the conversation today, bro.
100%. And you keep it, you keep it very real, very practical. And I think I no, there's no, I mean, not I think, there's no question that that resonates with people. And like we discussed on air, I got to give you props because from one of our previous podcasts, a client of mine, a local client, and you're out in Nevada, right? If I have that right.
Yeah.
So obviously someone local, I'm in Toronto, Canada, they found you and then they found me. And it's not really, and that's great. It's a great bonus, but I think that just speaks to, you're doing good stuff. So, you deserve props for that.
Yeah, likewise, dude. Likewise. You've been on a tear on Instagram recently too. We're gonna do something crazy today
I'm
and
ready. 100%.
not talk about the liver. Well, the liver will come up, we'll talk about some organ systems and stuff, but we're not gonna center a whole conversation around the liver, which I'm excited
I'm
about.
sick of it anyway.
Yeah, I know. You've probably spent, 350 hours this year talking about it already. So I laugh, but we'll talk about a handful of new different topics and things that I think you can speak really well to. But before we dive into some of the notes I have here, give us an update or the listeners an update on your end. Anything new over this past year besides some of these little nagging injuries you've been dealing with? We talked off air for a second, but anything new in Andy's world?
Some soccer injuries. Honestly, new. I mean, let's keep it real. On the personal front, I mean, I'm doing a lot of yoga, so I really love that. That's probably the one thing that I'm doing more, and that's because of the injuries, to be honest. But I'm a big fan of yoga. So if
Like
anyone,
vinyasa or like hot yoga
yeah, a
or
lot, a mix, a lot of, yeah, it's a lot of vinyasa. Sometimes hot yoga, sometimes not. But I've always done yoga. I've always done it. And I'm not great at it, but it's always been part of my routine. And honestly, this is just good. I think this is good free advice for anyone who is into physical activities, not to, like, from my perspective, not to put all your eggs in one basket. Because let's say for me, I play soccer, I do yoga, do some resistance training. And if one of those gets taken away from me, it's possible from an injury or from whatever it is, I probably still have access to the other one. And I think, like, there's probably parallels to nutrition, but I think for the physical activity, just for like normal people, like, I'm not an exceptional athlete. Like, I taught myself how to play soccer when I was like 18. I don't have an athletic background. So I'm just like a normal person, like, doing stuff. So I've always found like the value in being able to lean on something when something else gets taken away, So I don't know if you've had a similar experience, but.
honestly, yeah. I think for me, over the last 5 years or so, I've really dived into the just hypertrophy space. I've consumed so much information, gone to practicals, did continuing education, hired my own coach. Like there was a time for a 3 year stretch where I was only lifting 4 days a week. Maybe I'd play golf or whatever once a week, but
Sure.
that was the extent of my activity. And recently, over the last year, especially since having a kid, I've kind of diversified a little bit, but I've been running once a week consistently, which I've found a lot of enjoyment in. And also just like the newbie gains you get from starting a new exercise modality, I think is
So true. So
really
true.
fun to just like take advantage of and to like it's insane how good you can get quickly at certain things if you pick it up, even if you've played it or ran or whatever in the past, like just starting to build a routine around that again has been really helpful for me. And like you said, diversifying your exercise can kind of make you appreciate the other exercise modalities that you do when you eventually get to do that. So training 2, 3 days a week instead of 4 days a week, running, playing a couple sports per week, doing like a workout class or a Pilates class or pure barre class or something every once in a while. Like all of those things for me have brought more enjoyment than just trying to chase the last 10, 15% of a certain type of, lifting regimen. So I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, I think that's important for the majority of people here. I mean, there's always gonna be people who want to be true specialists and stuff, and I respect that. But 100%, I did reformer Pilates the first time this year as well. So that's also new. Hey, if I like Pilates, if I had all the time in the world, I'd be doing that stuff more. because it gets out those small muscles, which are very important actually for soccer, that are easy to neglect, right? Like, I'm doing squats and deadlifts are obviously all great. I mean, I guess depend these days, I'm not an expert in this area, right? So I'd be very careful to talk about it, but it depends how you ask, I guess. But anyway, for deadlifts, I know deadlifts are some, I feel like I saw Peter Attia talking about deadlifts on like a 30-second clip. But anyway, that's a story for another day.
Dude, I picture you on the Pilates performer. My sister is a Pilates instructor. She's a physical therapist, but like I have some
Super cool.
experience getting on the reformer, and nothing is more humbling than doing like 15 split squats with a pulse, or doing some of these core variations on this thing. And you do a
100%.
class 45 minutes straight, like very little breaks. You can see why people really enjoy that and why you get a good workout doing that. But I find that Pilates or some of those other, even yoga, right, is so complementary to the big things that other people are doing. Like, I've been somebody who said, like, yeah, if Pilates is your only type of workout modality, you're probably missing benefits from a lot of other things that we could be doing. So sprinkling it
That's fair.
in or having it be half of the puzzle is great. But I find that even when I do those classes, I'm like, holy shit, dude, I didn't know I could work my adductors the way that this class is torching them right now. So I picture you and your, your long legs up there, just like sweating in a room, full of women or whoever else is in the class.
The reformer is all mental because it's just unfamiliar, right? It's unfamiliar movements. I've only done it once. I do like mat Pilates too, I have to say, but well, I gotta get sponsored by Pilates Studio.
For sure, dude. Anything else on the business front? Any new services? Any updates on your end? I mean, I
Got my
admire
online
your
course, dude. Just doing a lot of coaching around fatty liver. I have my online course. I'm doing a lot more presentations, a lot more like invites to speak on the topic. Just which is cool. I'm still like a generalist at heart, right? And then we've talked about this before. Like the reason why I like fatty liver is because it appeals to like a generalist because look, it affects what is it? In the United States, it might be up to 1 in 3 people. It's gonna be 40% of people by 2050. So it's just such a broad thing. So it's almost you are talking to big audience, right? Which is why I really like it.
Absolutely, dude. Yeah. And I applaud your efforts, especially on social media. I mean, I know you kind of be present there and you have to grow and grow your brand and your image. And I know that's probably gotten you a lot of speaking opportunities,
Sure.
coaching
It
opportunities, has
helps.
allowed you to probably provide lower ticket, kind of entries to you and your services, which is great. But as somebody who I've been doing more videos recently and, trying to post 7, 8 times a week. It's like you see other people and other content creators doing that, and you just have this mutual respect for people who are showing up consistently. And I've always appreciated about that about you and just the effort that you put in there, because I know how hard that shit is, man.
I appreciate it. I feel like I'm an old man in the game, and I see like I have to level up. Like I put, I love the social media game. I love sharing information, and I've kind of let myself fall a little bit behind in a sense. But I'm not gonna, I just funny enough, kicking and screaming. I just rewatched that film with Will Ferrell and Robert Duvall. So that's a fun film. It's about, so I don't know if you know, it's about a
Pass
soccer
it to the
coach, but.
Italians. Yeah.
Yeah. That's legendary. But yeah, I'm not going out without a fight, let's say.
Oh shit, dude. I love it. Well, thank you for that. I always like catching up here. I want to kind of hard pivot into this first topic that we're going to chat about today. And it was funny. I was trying to think about like what we should talk about, because part of me was like, let's talk a little bit more about specific like lizard diseases and certain things that we can be a little bit more nuanced that people are struggling with these days. But we've covered the liver pretty thorough. And for me, especially on a podcast, like for this podcast, at least, I'm like you as a generalist or touching about a lot of topics. And then if and when you need specific, medical advice or guidance, like, you probably shouldn't be listening to a podcast on that. You should probably be working with a healthcare provider. So I feel like part of the podcast responsibility is to just be an exposure for people if they aren't listening or consuming this type of nutrition knowledge already. And it could just be something that helps people think a little bit more critically and gives them some confidence on how they can apply all of the messaging that they hear on these shows into their life. So part of me was like, yeah, we can keep being nitty gritty about the liver, but I kind of want to take a different direction today. And something that I've been talking about probably more than ever over this last year, and it might be different for you guys up in Canada, but inflation is pretty high. Cost of groceries are insane. A lot of my coaching recently has been, working within a budget for people. Like I've never talked about a budget for groceries. Like fortunately, I've had the privilege of working with clients who money isn't necessarily as much of an issue when it comes to their grocery spending and spending, $2.80 on a overnight oats packet every single day, like is not something that's breaking the bank. And there are people that we can, have conversations about nutrition around and maybe have a little bit more flexibility with them, so to speak. But people, I'm blessed hiring a coach, and part of that experience is us trying to save money on the back end for them, right? And avoid unnecessary spending or avoid food waste, right? But a lot of it has been centered around creating a budget and working within your means as it pertains to your nutrition and what you're spending on your food every month, both in the grocery store and away from home. So one thing that I want to chat with you about today is if you have an experience or what kind of experience you have working with people who are maybe a little bit, more conscious about how much they're spending, who need to be a little bit more diligent with how much money they're allocating to different things each month, nutrition is a big piece of that. And I'm curious if you've had that experience at all, especially in the last year or two. I know in the States, we've been battling a lot of uphill battles with a
Right.
lot of certain stuff. Like eggs at one point were like, almost
Same
75 cents
here.
an egg, right? So
Yeah.
like, there was there still is a lot of hurdles, but I just want to pose the question, have you noticed that with your population that you work with? And then we're going to talk about how we can kind of like create a budget with a certain set spending limit each month, and not to have hard numbers, but just kind of have an idea of like how we can approach this.
Yeah, it's, I mean, look, this is really important stuff. And myself personally, I may not ever explicitly state it, but a lot of what I try to do is to make common, conventional, economical foods. I don't try and make them seem better than they are, because that's, I can't, that's not what I do. But I let people realize actually some of the most important foods for longevity and for positive influencing your body. And I mean, canned beans have to come up there, right? I can talk about that till the cows come home. I'm happy to do so. I mean, I always keep that in mind. If I'm offering advice on social media, how accessible is this advice to, let's say, a broad audience? And maybe I don't, yeah, like I said, I don't always explicitly state it in those terms, but look, I believe that one of the, and I tell my clients this exact thing. If you have a can of fish and a can of beans and you pan fry those together with seasoning, and for $5 and 5 minutes, up approximating the cost and time, you can make a meal that I think if you had $50 and 50 minutes, it would be hard pressed to make something significantly better in terms of filling nutrient gaps, providing key nutrients, satiating you, getting enough protein and fiber. That's how I see things, and that's it. That's important to me. So there's no question about that. I'm heavily involved in that.
Yeah, for sure. And I already knew that the answer to that question. Like I know you do a good job like being able to provide recommendations that aren't really going to break the bank, if anything, are kind of a realization for people that nutrition doesn't have to be super expensive and you can meet a lot of your minimum requirements by not spending as much money as you might be spending right now. So to start, I want to just pose you this question. You have a new client who has, let's say, a child under 5 years old. So they're not like feeding a teenager by any means, but you're dealing with the husband and they're coming to you and you're looking kind of at finances for the month and they come up to you and say, hey, $800 US dollars, I don't know what that equates to in Canadian money up there, but around that like $800 mark, where does your brain go and how do you look at that individual and start to think, okay, here's some things I'm looking at that you might be doing well. Here's some things that maybe we need to give more attention on. What are some foods or some principles that you're teaching some of your clients on how to kind of like go into the grocery store and how to build your meals for the week? Like what goes into your mind when I give you that scenario? And I don't know where I necessarily came up with that $800 number. I think it's a little bit above the average spending potentially,
Sure.
but compared to some people, like it's kind of on a budget, right? Like I think I portioned out my spending for the month, and we have a lot of family help. People go to Costco, they get us food. So for
Sure.
us, I think we spend $800 to $1,000 a month max on food, and that includes the meals and everything that we eat away from home. So I kind of came to that conclusion, but again, this could be plus or minus, $100 to $300 for a lot of people. But where do you start with that, given some of those parameters, and how do you think most people can start to approach their nutrition in a way that isn't, how much can I spend on organic strawberries all the time? Like, I think so many people think that nutrition has to be expensive. So I want people to appreciate, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be that way all the time.
Yeah, I mean it's a good question. Okay, it's a big question, and I would probably go through, food group by food group, and where can we find the most economic options that still represent what only one food group can offer, right? So, like, let's start with, I don't know, if we start with fruits and vegetables, it's kind of the obvious answer with fruits and vegetables, I guess. Well, there's a few, right? So the first is, frozen obviously opens up a lot of doors. Right. And I was posting about this the other day. Frozen fruit, that's my after dinner, like, quote unquote dessert. I know some people don't like using that term for fruit, but it is what it is. That's how I see it. I very much enjoy it. I love frozen fruit. It lasts, it's economical relative to fresh. You're gonna get a lot more frozen blueberries than you are fresh. They're gonna last a lot longer. It's kind of fun. It's almost like novel, right? Because it's almost like a sorbet. So it's twofold. So it's one is the explicitly more economical options, which is like the frozen stuff, but it's also appreciating that the common stuff, quote unquote, is much better than you think. Like, greenish bananas. So bananas, are, I think it's fair to say, one of the more economical fruits, generally speaking. Greenish bananas are like one of the highest sources of resistant starch, which is super good for your gut bacteria, right? Super, super good. The gut bacteria is like associated with, like, again, mood, like a metabolic health, et cetera, et cetera. So I would say let's appreciate some things that maybe don't get enough love. And then let's look, at the frozen section. And then, obviously vegetables are the same thing, but other with vegetables as well. I mean, even stuff like green bell peppers, like they have unique compounds that aren't found in other things. Right? People think, like, some of these things are a little bit less sexy. They don't really fully appreciate. Like green bell peppers are high in like specific compounds, like from the flavonoid family, right? So feel good about that, right? And really appreciate that the value of a fruit or vegetable, like since we're talking about that, it's not necessarily dictated by its cost. You know what I mean? I think that is like a really important statement to make. So I would say I start there, and then like we talk about quote unquote healthy fats, right? Like avocado is obviously pricey. Certain types of nuts are pricey. But here's a fun thing to know. Sunflower seeds are the one of the highest sources of vitamin E. So let's raise those up. And they have, like, they're not, that different of a profile. Like peanuts and sunflower seeds are really not that different profile wise. They're a little bit different than, let's say, an almond, right? Okay. So there's that. You know what I mean? And understanding, like, really, avocado, nuts, seeds, like, there's not a lot of other foods that really offer what they offer. So, like, can we find the most economical representative? And then obviously we all need more fiber. What's the easiest, most economical way to get more fiber and like make yourself more full? It's got to be beans. Like, yes, dry beans are more economical. Canned beans, you're talking about a young family where it's really busy. Maybe you got to find the sweet spot between those. But I have a saying, Luke, and I'm gonna, I want to hand it back to you and to like to get your thoughts on what I've said so far. But I have a saying that cool people don't eat beans, but smart people do, because beans are not sexy, they're not pricey. But everywhere we look, like the bean intake goes up, healthier, more robust gut microbiome, right? Lower cholesterol levels, right? Like lower blood sugar levels. You're gonna be more full after a meal because of the high fiber content. You're gonna close your fiber gap very easily. So it's like little stuff like that is where I would start. I mean, obviously we could talk about protein diversity as well, but yeah, what do you think about what I would just said, what I just said so far? What do you want to add? And like also make
Yeah.
I want to make sure I'm going in the right direction.
Yeah, no, I think first and foremost you need to print that on a shirt or a hat and start selling that as merch, because I think that's genius.
Yeah.
Beans, legumes, like a lot of these forgotten about foods are, I want to bring up the word superfood here in a second.
Yeah.
We'll kind of chat about that before we maybe do a case
I
study
like
at the
using
end.
that
But
word, so
yeah,
we'll
just
talk about
like,
it.
again, what I love about your brain is you start thinking about, hey, what unique foods offer specific advantages that you might not get with other particular foods. And that
Right.
could be comparing fruits to other fruits. It could be comparing fruits to vegetables. It could be comparing oats to legumes and et cetera, right? And I think the thing that I want people to appreciate is that diversity is really what we're probably talking about more than anything right now. You and I have talked about how we set the barometer for, like, how we're making sure we're hitting our a minimum amounts of a lot of these macronutrients in the past. And you've in the past have, heard about, or we've talked about magnesium or potassium
Right.
consumption. We've also talked about how fiber consumption, just daily fiber intake, could be a good barometer for how much micronutrients you're eating. But when I listen to us talk about these things, I think about the general consumer and I think about, okay, there is a tendency for people to start thinking about foods in this way. And I think it's a double-edged sword where, okay, if I'm eating green bananas and it has resistant starch, and maybe that's a reinforcement or a positive reinforcement for them to start reaching for those foods more often, I think that could be a net positive. The other side of the story is like, hey, you know what? Maybe somebody is thinking so much about everything that they put into their body, and they're thinking about, am I balancing this perfect breakfast every single morning? You can see obviously how that might add stress to people's life or decision-making process and make this more overwhelming than I think what we're making it out to be. So
Sure.
I'm curious, you know, for you and your standpoint, because I'll throw my number out there. My magic number, it's not even supported by literature necessarily, but that 25 to 30 different types of plant foods per week for me is a number
Sure.
that I've kind of come up with. And when I look at somebody's food logs and I see that we're eating beans or we're having a taco soup and we're eating two or three vegetables a day and we're having some frozen smoothies and we're mixing some chia seeds or basil seeds in there, it's like when I count on average what they're doing each day over the course of the week, even if there's similar stuff throughout the course of the week, like, and they're getting 25, 30 or more different plant foods, to me, I feel at peace knowing that they are doing their best hitting a lot of these specific nutrient needs without thinking about that as much. But I also have people who really appreciate the fact that, like, I like thinking about the way that these unique foods and compounds give my liver a boost or give my immune system a boost or
Right.
give me a su sufficient amount of vitamin A or whatever the case may be. So I'm curious, when you are doing your group coaching or your one-on-one coaching, just from my curiosity, are you always talking about the health benefits of these particular foods, or is there another metric that you're helping people shoot for, or just like general guidelines of following the two, three today vegetables per day and trying to find different colors and eat the rainbow? Like, what's kind of your thought process around helping somebody comprehend that a little bit better if they don't pay that much attention already?
Yeah, 100%. So if we zoom out, how I look at it is if we look at fruit, vegetables, the broader umbrella, which might be quote unquote healthy fats, which is basically nuts, seeds, avocado, and then we can put legumes or let's call it other like high fiber, low glycemic index starches, which, you know, the brown rice, the buckwheat, the whole grain bread, the quinoa would fall in there, right? So we go across those four markers. I mean, we could expand this further, but for the sake of like some simplicity, let's pick those four things. What I want to see, and how I frame it to my clients is, most days I like to see at least one representative from each group, because if I know that each group is being represented by one item, and then how I frame it to my clients is this: one serving is like you find someone on the street and you show them. They should call it a serving, which means like it shouldn't be one piece of broccoli. It doesn't need to be a Santa bag full of broccoli, right? Would a reasonable person say this looks like a serving? Cool, let's go with that. You know what I mean? And that's a marker. Now, on another level, what I tell my clients as well is this: is like if we use these four families of foods, and these are not the only foods that I think. Obviously, we haven't talked about protein, right? So let's put that aside for a second. Think about these four families of foods, which I believe have unique, irreplaceable advantages. That's a key part of my philosophy. What I tell my clients is the first step and the biggest step to not have these foods, to go from not eating these to eating them, is a massive jump. Okay. You make that jump, you're going to change your life. A smaller but still important jump is pursuing variety in each of these groups. So can it not just be frozen broccoli? I mean, let's use the economical considerations. Can it be a frozen blend sometimes of broccoli, cauliflower, and carrots, or a different one? Can not just be green bananas, can also be green bananas and maybe a grapefruit, an orange, or an apple, right? Apples are very, for like a conventionally available food, apples are very unique nutritionally, right? And sometimes we take for granted common foods as if there's actually nothing special about them, but apples are very unique. They have some of the same compounds that green tea and dark chocolate has in terms of antioxidants, right? It's like really cool. Beans, same thing, right? Like red kidney beans, you know, have the most, I think most antioxidants. Black beans have like anthocyanins, and like lentils are usually the best tolerated digestively. So, like, you know, can we get variety? Yes, but if you're getting lentils at all, you're way better. You're still in a great position. Same with like nuts. Like each nut and seed has a different advantage, right? So, yes, if we start just sunflower seeds, great. But maybe every 2 weeks we bring in something different. Maybe we focus on, you know, almonds or pecans or whatever it is. So, first step is getting each food represented. And you can do really well there, live well there. Next step, if you're as your life and desire allows, variety in each of the food groups over time. So, I mean, this is how I live. This is how I literally teach my clients. And I don't always say, I don't always present it like this in social media in those terms, but that is really insight into my approach.
Yeah, and I love that, dude. I love that. We have a lot of similarities, and I think the thing that I can't stop thinking about that is such an integral part of this creating a budget for your food for the month and saving money and spending within your limits is just the act of planning or just thinking about what your week is going to look like or the next 10 days or even
Sure.
just fucking tomorrow for some people. There's a lot of when I have a new client come in and we're doing an audit and I have them fill out this obstacle questionnaire and I'm looking at what are some of the barriers that are getting or keeping people from like eating quote unquote healthy consistently or
Right.
meeting their needs or getting enough fiber. A lot of it is failure to plan, eating away from home pretty often, kids, and just juggling all of the other responsibilities that they have. It's usually some combination of those things together. And I find that people who are unable to plan their food around their chaotic and busy schedule, it leads to takeout, it leads to getting stuff away from home, it leads to not eating at all sometimes and then binging later in the day. A lot of the struggles that people have are just not knowing what the fuck their day is going to bring, right? And you
Right.
can track, you can make your menu for the week. There's a lot of things that we could do to kind of just plan in advance. But when I think it comes, when it comes to making a budget, knowing what you're going to eat for the week, or at least having an idea, I think can make the biggest difference. Because when we start to develop kind of your menu for the week or looking out and mapping out what we might do for the next 5 days, that's when you have an idea of how you can make meals, how you can prep stuff, how you can have different snacks, how you can kind of like construct your day even before it even happens. And that to me, I think, is one of the biggest kind of like improvements that a lot of people can make to save time, money, and just mental energy thinking about all this
Right.
nutrition every single day. So I'm curious how you kind of, maybe approach looking at a schedule or routine or meal prep or insert whatever descriptive word we talk about when it comes to like planning for the week. What's your individual process or what's some stuff that you work on with clients? And I'll kind of talk about mine, and there's probably a lot of similarities between the two as well. But how can we kind of talk about this menu for the week and then how that fits into grocery shopping, buying what you need, and then ideally, again, saving money or coming under budget on what we're spending on our food every single month?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think first and foremost, it really is like I always tell my clients that people who are more successful with nutrition, they're very observant, they're very reflective, they kind of know who they are, right? So you gotta know first and foremost, you gotta know who you are around food and meal preparation. Are you someone who's willing to cook once a week? Are you someone who's willing to cook 3 times a week? Right? Are you happy leftovers, the same leftovers for 4 days or not? You have to be honest with yourself. Like, we don't need to fit a square peg into the round hole. Know who you are, know what you're willing to do. Now, equally, a few other points. How often are you willing to go grocery shopping? I very often tell clients, like, be open to grocery shopping once more a week. Makes it less burdensome, makes it less onerous, reduces like the volume of food you need to buy on the trip. Like, is that doable for you? That's a recommendation I give often because I find a lot of people, and I grew up like this with my family. And now it's not a bad thing, but like we do these massive shops that like my parents would just like dread it because it's like you're coming home with all this stuff because you've deferred it. Then you have much less flexibility as to unless you've really planned it well. Okay, fair enough, right? You have less flexibility about what to eat. If your desire for something changes, you know, something available, you don't have that flexibility. And another thing I often say, so that's really like that really the answer to that question determines everything else, quite frankly, right? And the other thing I tell my clients, especially when ordering out is plan B, I say, look, the frozen meals of today are not the frozen meals of 10, 15, 20 years ago. Like I have clients who I work with where we have really strong plans, and those plans involve a frozen meal a day. And they can carry that so whatever bit of sodium that takes because we're doing differently all other areas. And there's nothing wrong with that. Right. You can create a strong strategy where you're having a microwave meal a day and you have pieces around that. So don't be afraid to make concessions for the greater good, I guess, right? If we want to be philosophical about it. But I mean, that being said, I'm happy. I'm very happy and keen to like, hear your approach and how you bring this to life.
Yeah, dude, I love that. I think that's a really important point to make. There's that's why nutrition again is so it can be kind of complicated, because again, what works for Andy and what works for me is polar opposite of what might, somebody else prefer when it comes to their nutrition and building their menu for the week. You said something earlier that I wanted to kind of like highlight or just get your opinion on too, which is like this idea of like playing into people's preferences or their personality type. There's a lot of people like I'm in agreement that, like, yeah, know who you are, know what you're willing to do, work within that. And I think that for the most part, that's what I do and what we do with a lot of our clients. But even within that, there's room for opportunity for people to grow and develop a new identity
Sure.
to be able to, you know, appreciate the fact that in order to get to where I want to be, it's probably going to take me going grocery shopping twice a week sometimes. It's probably going to make me actually making three more meals per week or having stuff available around the house and not just like, I'm this chaotic person, and therefore I am making decisions on the fly, and therefore I only can buy the meal prep from the meal prep company and spend X amount of money every month. Like that might work for a period of time, but we have to appreciate the fact that there might be a different path that might be actually realistic that we can start making steps towards that might give you
Right.
a better outcome. Right. So that's what I think a lot of coaching is. It's just exploring those options and opportunities and being like, hey, this is. Given your schedule and your parameters and whatever, this might be the thing that we lean on right now more than ever. We have our grab and go items for breakfast. We have our microwave meal for lunch. And then we have maybe something that we make together for dinner. Or if we're going out, we're ordering this or going to this type of restaurant or building around these principles when we're ordering away from home. So there's such a spectrum of what it means to eat healthy and what it might mean fitting into somebody's lifestyle. But
Yep.
building off yours, I agree. I think for me, it's like, realizing what does your week look like? What are your commitments? What are things that you have planned already, whether it's eating away from home or work stuff, or we have Friendsgiving or Thanksgiving coming up next week, or, you know, I know Canada celebrates things a little bit differently, but we just have a lot of
Yeah, it's
holiday
coming up.
seasons coming up, you know? So like, this is a good time of the year to appreciate the fact that like, yeah, you know what? You're probably not going to be making every meal from scratch every single day for the rest of the year. Like that's probably not realistic for a lot of people. And so once we appreciate that, that's when we can kind of fill in the gaps, you know? It's like, hey, from Monday to Wednesday, all my schedule's open. So maybe that's a day where I do a little meal prep Saturday or Sunday, or maybe I cook dinner on Monday and then I have leftovers for Tuesday and Wednesday for that meal for the week, right? But once we can kind of better understand what your schedule looks like, that's when we can kind of write a menu or at least jot down some ideas of what we could eat around what our day looks like. Whether you're a stay-at-home mom or dad, or you have a, you know, 70-hour work week ahead. We still have some opportunity to see where and what we can eat. And again, for some people, you might be leaning on more prepackaged convenience stuff, but guess what? We write those down, we add that to the grocery list if we don't have it already. And before you know it, you can go ahead or go to the store with a plan and actually know what you need for the week and not overspend or underspend. That might get you in trouble later in the week. So a lot of it, I feel like, is just knowing what the fuck your week is going to entail or your weekend, and then being able to find some. You know, points in time that we can use to prep or at least have some convenient stuff that we can kind of grab and go. And I find that when you do that, spending away from home is a lot less because you're not as inclined to stop by the coffee store or to go to lunch with your coworkers on Thursday or to spend extra money and eat your, you know, dinner at happy hour instead of just grabbing a drink or two. Like that's when people can actually start to be a little bit more of an informed decision maker and spend a little less money away from home because I think that's the biggest expense that a lot of people have is just price of
Sure.
food away from home. And I don't know about you guys in Canada, bro, but it's like $18 for a fucking meal here, you know, where we live on the average place. Even if you go to Chipotle, you're going to spend $17 on a bowl these days. So I find that when we can kind of identify times where we can eat less away from home, even if it's as simple as a breakfast stuff in the morning, you're getting probably 10, 15% of your total monthly, you know, allowance on your food back, and you save time, money, and nutrients on that as well sometimes.
No, 100%. I mean, yeah, I tell my clients, like, look, nutrition's a game of many things. It's a game of to each their own as well, right? And there's only, like, I mean, everyone's different, and there's only so many different permutations. Like, are you gonna meal prep? Are you gonna cook dinner and then have the and then make four servings of recipe and have dinner, lunch, and then rotate that? Are you a recipe follower? Are you an a la carte cooker? Some people think that they're recipe followers, but then when it push comes to shove, open up a recipe. And at the end of the day, I tell my clients, and maybe some foodies would disagree with me, a recipe is really four or five core ingredients, like five spices. So the disparity between, you know, a la carte cooking, especially if you have a, and I'm a big fan, like invest in her, you know, invest in herbs and spices, because for very little effort, you can revolutionize and diversify the taste of the same dish. Because what I also tell people, and you know, and there might be people who disagree with me, there's only so, I mean, I think the objective reality is there's only so many foods that exist that are really nutrient dense that are gonna like change someone's life for the better. And then from that group, there's a much smaller group of what you're willing to work with, whether for preference reasons, for economical reasons, for convenience reasons. So As such, it's not a bad thing if you're only working with a relatively small group of foods, assuming that, as long as you like that and it's efficient for you, obviously, someone's personal preference and enjoyment supersedes everything else for me, right? That's the number one criteria. I tell my clients, I'm not here to tell you to do something that you don't want to do, right? So those are some like sentiments and like some philosophical things I also like consider when we talk about this kind of subject area. But you're right. I mean, it is super important stuff. And look, getting a frozen meal, and you're absolutely right. To eat a meal out that's balanced, you are looking at that price point. A frozen meal is going to give, let's use the macro perspective, the protein, the macros, the fiber. You're going to replicate the macros for a third of the price, for a third of your time, because you're just microwaving something. Yeah, maybe it's going to be a third as enjoyable. Okay, cool. There's going to be a concession there because it's a microwave meal. But hey, you know what? And again, it's not that I'm massive on frozen meals. I'm telling everyone the first thing is go buy frozen meals all the time. But in the real world, if the option is a modestly sized frozen meal with like 20 grams of protein and some vegetables, and it's a third of the price, and it is going to probably have less sodium than that meal out. And calorically, if you're trying to moderate, which not everyone is, but obviously people trying to gain muscle and gain strength, and that's different. So yeah, those are some floating thoughts on this subject area, which is
Yeah,
an important
dude.
one.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the amount of food that my wife and I are essentially reheating. Like we go to Costco or we go to Walmart or whatever the grocery store, and we're just, we're big on these like sheet pan veggies that Costco's been having recently.
Same.
You throw them in the air fryer for 15 minutes, add a little herbs and spice, maybe a little Parmesan cheese. It's to die for. But guess what? We don't have to do the 30 minutes of prep work to chop all of these sheet pan veggies up and then put them in the micro or the oven for an hour. And I think this perception of like processed frozen, food that isn't, made from scratch, like I think we need to check our definition of that at the door, because for a lot of people, when you let yourself kind of appreciate the fact that convenience can and is part of the equation a lot of times, and that's not something that you're taking the easy way out, that to me can save a lot of time and money, and just stress for people too. And again, a lot of people who are not leaning on some of these things aren't even eating those things at all. So if we can plug and place some of these other items that are found that are at a relatively, inexpensive price point and just kind of keep it in our fridge and they don't go bad, and we can use a bag of this over a 2 week stretch, like I think that's a win for a lot of people. But I'm just laughing thinking about, since my wife and I have had a kid, it's like our idea of cooking these days is, what is the most efficient way that we can make this as humanly possible? Even if we don't have a plan of
100%.
what we're doing for dinner tonight, we look in the freezer, we look in the pantry, we look in, what our fridge, and we can kind of construct a meal. It's like, hey, we have these veggies, we have this jasmine rice, and then we also have these Just Bare chicken nuggets that we can just kind of cook. And we kind of construct a meal. And even if we didn't have that planned on paper for the week, we can still make that work. But it's because you planned and shopped and have these foods in advance that allows you to do that successfully. Because if not, then we're going to In-N-Out, and that's what our dinner looks like for the night. So I want to, not that we need to give people permission to buy more processed foods, but obviously there's a spectrum of what processed quote unquote means when it comes to food these days. And it's not the same as like the Swanson's delivery truck with the chicken fettuccine Alfredo that
Right.
you bought when you were a kid. And that's what your, definition of like processed food and frozen foods are. That's not really what we're talking about. And there's so many options out there that can help so many people that I don't want people to sleep on that these days, because it really can make a difference.
Take a look at the frozen section and just be in awe and enjoy it, because there's a lot of stuff in there that is really impressively good. Even something like salmon, which is otherwise very expensive, like just to oven bake some frozen salmon. But just generally speaking, I tell my clients, go to the frozen section, check out the frozen fruit, check out the frozen vegetables, check out the frozen meals, right? Because they are, it's pretty impressive some of the stuff that's out there. And efficiency is absolutely fundamental, because then you get to the question of asking yourself, okay, well, if you're spending too long meal prep, is that taking away maybe from your ability to go for a walk, to spend family time, to exercise? Because then you're asking the question, well, I don't think, look, if it's 30, 40 minutes more time between fresh and frozen vegetables, and that takes away your time from being physically active, you're not getting a return on investment on that decision in that case, right? I mean, it's always that straightforward, but that's also why I suppose one way to look at it.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. The last thing I'm kind of jumps to mind for me as we kind of talking around our budgeting and scheduling and making meal prep for the week and just kind of coming up with our menu, because all of this kind of goes into people spending ideally less on their groceries, but getting more for that investment that they have
Right.
at the grocery store. But a lot of it comes with like repurposing or eating leftovers or batch cooking. And And again, if you're somebody who's like, I can't eat the same meal every single day, like, okay, like, again, we have to acknowledge that there's trade-offs with that, but maybe, like you said, there's a way that we could add a different sauce or seasoning or condiment or add a different carbohydrate source. So you're eating the same, maybe protein source, for example, but you're eating it in a different way. And, for some people, if we're making our menu for the week and it's like, okay, what budget do we have for our proteins this week? And it's like, maybe you get a rotisserie chicken and then you also get some, 2 pounds of ground beef or ground turkey. And then for that ground turkey, when we look at our dinners for the week, it's like, cool, maybe that first night we can make like, our turkey tacos or whatever it is. And then the next night we can repurpose that and we can make, a couple burger patties and we bake that or put that on the barbecue. And then to finish up the rest of that ground turkey, that's when we can put it in like a pasta or a marinara sauce and add it to like a bean or lentil pasta with a little bit more protein, right? And so when we look at your protein sources, you can kind of stretch it out into different meals and find ways to repurpose that. You could use that for salmon, you could use that for beef or steak or chicken, insert whatever protein source. Like there's so many ways to repurpose that, if you're choosing to eat meat each week. The same goes for veggies, same goes for carbohydrates, even fruits, vegetables, but there's a lot of ways that you can use that same protein source, but pair it with different things. And again, ideally save on the amount of money that you're spending away from home and maximizing the amount of, meats and things that we're using instead of like letting some of it go to waste. Or we all know that you buy a bag of spinach and all of a sudden you're throwing it out every week when you get the new bag of spinach and you're putting that in your, veggie drawer in your refrigerator. So I think the last thing that I wanted to mention was just finding ways to like repurpose a lot of the foods that you're having, or maybe you make 3 or 4 days worth of minestrone soup or chicken tortilla soup or whatever, whatever soup. It's soup season. It's cold over here. I know Toronto is kind of chilly too, but this time of the year for me,
100%.
stews, broths, soups, just like those crock pot creations can go such a long way for a lot of people. Not to mention putting in all your beans and lentils and protein sources and sneaking veggies in there. Just such a hack for a lot of people. But there's so many ways, like once you start to get into a rhythm of grocery shopping once or twice a week, having food prepped on hand, creating your menu for the week, that's when you can actually start thinking a little bit more logically of like how I want to construct my way of eating. And even if that doesn't have it happen perfectly, you bet your ass your week is probably going to look a little bit better when you get to that Saturday, Sunday, and you're thinking about your next week instead of looking back and be like, holy shit, I dropped the ball this week and I ate away from home 5 days, this last 5 days when I look at it. So I think that's something that I found was really helpful.
No, 100%. My clients love crock pots. I mean, and this is the value I think of, not to push our profession of dietitians, is that when you have the vision laid out in front of you and you can kind of see things more clearly, it also gives you more room to be flexible and just to quiet the noise as to like the of as to what it is that you should be doing, right? Because that we can't underestimate how important that is. And I realize it more and more, Luke, is that like, the more I learn, the more I have to be careful because I'm kind of distancing myself from my clients. Like I'm thinking on all these advanced topics, advanced concepts, when really we're like, we're here more at the basics. Like the people in front of me are more at the basics. But I think people need to know that if you have a bag of frozen broccoli, a can of beans, and a pack of ground beef, you throw the, you can throw the canned beans and the ground beef, season the heck of them in the frying pan, put the broccoli in the air fryer. You got a couple of days of meals. And if you season those well, you're gonna have like, potentially a very tasty meal that just checks every box that you could want to check. It doesn't have to be harder than that. It doesn't mean it always has to be that, but just to know of it, you can make what I call a high level meal, right? Very easily, as long as you have the vision and you have and the chains are taking it off that you can combine different things. And yeah, you can have canned beans. And yeah, like I mean, an air fryer will revolutionize how easily you can prepare balanced meals. And the crock pot I don't have, slow cooker I don't have, but I have a lot of clients love that stuff. And it is so conducive to throwing different stuff, different components and making balanced meals. So I totally agree with
Yeah,
that.
absolutely. Yeah, I love that. And when you're kind of making, kind of your list for the week, like when you're cooking more and you're batch cooking, like that's when eating less calories becomes a lot easier for people, especially if your goal is fat loss, hitting enough protein, meeting your minimum fiber recommendations, getting a lot of these macronutrients in. Like, even if you're not thinking about all those things, you putting effort towards mastering the basics and fundamentals of a lot of the stuff corrects a lot of other things without you even having to put a shit ton of mental
That's
energy in it.
fair. Yeah.
And the next topic I wanted to pick your brain about was this idea of like superfoods. There's not a word I think that has been more polarizing in like the dietetic space. Word, two words, superfoods, one or two words, whatever it is. But like, I
True, good point.
remember
Yeah, one or two.
the house that I'm living in now, my grandma used to live here, and this used to be her library, and she was kind of a health nut. And there was one of, she had like two or three books, and it was just all about superfoods. And I remember reading it. It was like when I was going through my undergrad, and I was like reading this book. And of course, they're using a lot of like, big words. And it's a book, it's meant to be sold. But the premise of the book itself was like, hey, look at all of these foods that have these unique compounds, kind of like you're alluding to, that
Right.
you can't necessarily find in all these other foods or even in similar fruits. And because of that, if you can make an effort to include or incorporate more of these things, you're probably better off. Now, they can be taken to the extreme where it's like, this really helps reduce all the inflammation in your body, or it's going to, blunt all of your blood sugar, response after meals. Like, there are claims that kind of get taken to the next step, and whether those are true or not, or where that data is being extrapolated from is another conversation. But I tend to be a fan of the idea that, like, hey, when we look at these foods and we classify other foods, we're looking at kind of like a hierarchy of importance. There is a class of foods and a lot of different foods out there that we can consider as superfoods because you're getting unique compounds that you can't get from elsewhere.
Right.
You are somebody who I have followed who has not shit on superfoods, has kind of talked about superfoods in a sense in your own definition of it, which has been a breath of fresh air because I've seen so many people and healthcare professionals talk about it's just food and all food is, similar and it just has more or less macros. But I think sometimes that is more of an overly reductionist mindset that kind of poo-poos the idea that there are benefits to eating some of these other foods. And sometimes people aren't as inclined to do that when sometimes if you give a label or kind of put these on a pedestal, it might be more of an incentive for people to eat that. And I've noticed that you've kind of talked about that or have done that, not to put words in your mouth, but have done that
Yeah.
in a way with certain foods and posts that you've made online. So what was your introduction to the word superfood, if you don't mind me asking, and kind of how have you implemented that in your practice and your communication with clients, and how can we kind of like just comprehend what that definition even means and how we can use that to our advantage as consumers?
Yeah, no, that's a fun topic. Okay, so I think, there's a probably at least three balloons here that we have to pop to talk about this topic. I think first of all, it is true, right, that the conceptually I'm aligned with you that I look at a superfood as something that has something unique that is of great value to someone that is not easy to replicate elsewhere. And that's how I see it in my bubble. Now, there's definitely another side to that. How is that perceived by the average person? And there's definitely a disparity there. That's totally fair. That part I will concede that that is a thing. But I think when you also bring context in, this is a superfood for this issue. And then you provide very specific evidence, right? And then you look at the evidence like coffee, and we talk about coffee and liver health. We see coffee drinkers have a way lower risk of, like, at that point, how can you not say that coffee is essentially a superfood for people who have liver health conditions? It's a superfood doesn't entail necessity, it just entails like a unique benefit, right? So I think there's that aspect to it, right? So there's context, there's perception. But the other thing, I have to be honest, like the more that I think about it, you're absolutely, I am someone, I use the word, I can't honestly recall where I was first introduced to it. I just like the word because I am someone who likes to, like I said, like we talked about earlier, I like to elevate foods and let people understand what makes them special. Because most of the time on social media, the opposite takes place, which is to put foods down, to look at a food and to see it only by its least favorable component rather than its multiple, highly favorable components, right? Like that's a shame, right? It's a shame, and people do that not because they don't, not because they really be, some of them believe it, but they do it because negativity attracts more attention, right? It's an inevitable aspect of social media and human nature. But I think the further point, which would be a good counter argument to my case, is the more I look into different foods, I mean, every food has something unique about it. That's the other part. That's the other interesting part, right? You if you spend enough time, like I do, like you do, like people in our profession do, and you really look at on a granular level at all of these different foods and what they offer, it's not hard to make the case that everything has something special about it. Now the question is whether or not you're accessing what's special about it, right? Historically, whether or not you've accessed something special, what's special about it, and does your current context benefit greatly or more than the average person for accessing it more in the future, right? Because in a different universe where everyone had iron deficiency, red meat could be a superfood, right? And I mean, I know there may be, and I mean, I don't not to even go down this path. And I know, like, like red meat has many unique characteristics as fish does and so on, right? So it's all a matter of context, I think. It's context that makes the magic, if that makes sense.
Really does. Yeah. Thank you for that answer. Because I think the difference between like dietitians or, the Andes out there that use the word superfoods are using it in a context that is a little bit more relatable to the consumer and isn't necessarily like over sensationalizing everything to the point where like this food is the food that's going to cure potential risk of cancer in the future, right? Because you see those claims attached to some of these foods as well. But it's just the recognition, just the acknowledgement alone that like, hey, you know what? There are probably, benefits that you can't get from a lot of other foods by eating something like sardines or chia seeds or lentils or whatever the food might be. And it's worth your attention and it's worth figuring a way to incorporate that into your diet to see if you like it and see if you can add to this diversity that we're talking about. Because again, I find that some people can really benefit from thinking food in this way where they're getting, a particular nutrient and makes them feel good. I'm eating my Brazil nut every day and I'm getting selenium and this is a superfood.
Right.
And I think that reinforcement can help people implement habits that make it more likely for them to continue it, right? And it improves their adherence. And that's where I'm on board with it. But again, when it comes to like big 30,000 foot view thing, it's like we're just talking about diversity again here. And we're appreciating the fact that all the different colors, all the different fruits, all the different vegetables, all the different plant compounds, all the different meats, all of these different things offer, their own unique profile of nutrients. And that's why diversifying and having different proteins, having different plant sources, having different fruits every single week is probably going to be an advantage to you from a variety standpoint, from a food experience enjoyment standpoint, but also from a nutrient acquisition standpoint. And that's why I think this whole conversation around diversity is such a wonderful recommendation for a lot of people because sure, you could eat your apple and your green, banana every single day and have the same fiber brand cereal with your walnuts and have some type of dinner that's different every night. And if you do that every day for the full year, like I'll take that over the traditional Western diet that we're seeing a lot of people have.
100%.
But even leveling that up where it's like, okay, we use pecans instead of the walnuts today, or we add basil seeds instead of the chia seeds, or maybe instead of doing that, creation, we have a parfait with fruits and other things, or maybe we have oats for breakfast, or maybe you're not eating breakfast. Great. But like, what are we doing for lunch? And I think being able to rotate through 5 to 10 different types of meals or breakfasts or pairings with everything could just give people a unique advantage that you might not get from eating the same thing every day. And especially if you're eating more, packaged processed foods away from home that you get through a drive-through all the time.
100%. Yeah. I mean, look, I tell my clients the same thing, right? If you're gonna have a bag of frozen broccoli every day the rest of your life, I mean, you're gonna be in a better position than most. But if you can, mix that up with some artichoke or some Brussels sprouts, then you'll be in an even better position. And now everyone's built a little bit different. And by the way, Luke, we can talk another 10 minutes past what I told you. It was a good conversation. I'll make it happen so we can keep this going. Okay. But yeah, it's like it also depends on the individual. Like, are you good with repetition? Because there's a lot of people straight up that tell me, like, I'm good to do the same thing all the time, right? So it comes right back to the same thing, knowing who you are. Don't try and resist that. Learn from what you've tried, what you haven't tried in the past. Know what makes you feel good about your week, and don't be afraid to embrace that. And when you work with a professional like us, it's like we're experts at bringing it to life, right? Bringing that to life and to curate a vision for you that takes into consideration like who you are and what you're willing to do. And that's extraordinarily important. I mean, there's simply no getting around it.
Agreed, dude. Agreed. There's two directions we could go right here. One that I would
Sure.
love to ask is what your favorite quote unquote superfoods are and maybe your top 3 to 5 of them that maybe are underconsumed in your opinion or ways that we can incorporate more of. We can chat around that, wrap it up there, or we can go into our little case study. I think the case study is going to be pretty long and go longer than 10 minutes. So I'm almost leaning towards the first part where maybe we talk about some of those unique foods. But what do you think you'd prefer to talk
Let's
about?
do that, and then we can do the case study next time.
That
You know
sounds
what?
good.
Why
Yeah.
not? Because
Yeah, that sounds
we know we
good.
gotta do it. We gotta run it back
That
again.
sounds good.
This
Yeah.
is a tough question, right?
Yeah.
Because, and let's just have some fun. Let's be philosophical about it. Because to pick of my favorite superfood, one of the big criterias I have to include is I have to have the perception that it's underconsumed or it's undervalued. Okay, that's key, because if something's super commonly consumed, it doesn't mean that for someone else it's not a superfood, but it kind of just diminishes the likelihood that it is, right? Just because it's already widely consumed. So if I use that criteria, I mean, my first superfood, I have to put any legume, any bean, right? It's like they are so underconsumed. It only takes a small amount to get the benefit, right? What's the benefit of beans? They're extraordinarily high in a specific type of fiber, which we know increases levels of healthy gut bacteria. We know, like in case studies of people who live long, oh, they have these healthy bacteria in larger supply. It's not direct causation in this case, but obviously there's something there. We look at the blue zones. Oh, they're all in different parts of the world. They all live longer. They all eat beans. Interesting. Oh, most people have high cholesterol, high blood sugar, and they're not full after meals. Oh, well, beans can resolve all of that because that's what they do. They're low glycemic index, they're high magnesium, they're high in fiber. The type of fiber they have is very good for lowering cholesterol, lowering blood sugar levels. So you see all these problems that people have that the average person contends with. And this one food, which is underappreciated, I'm not saying it's magic, like it resolves it by itself. It's gonna go pretty damn far, right? So any bean, number one, absolutely. Number two, I'm gonna pick sardines. And why not? Sardines, extremely high in omega-3 fatty acids, right? Which are also found in salmon, but the spirit of today's conversation is economics. So I don't think it's reasonable or fair to pick out salmon today. Because salmon is very pricey. I mean, the cost of salmon at the grocery store I go to doubled pre and post COVID, right? That's the reality of it. Now, sardines, well, what's the wonderful thing about sardines? You get essentially all the benefits of salmon. It's the lowest mercury fish that's also high in omega-3s, okay? It's environmentally friendly because they reproduce at a rapid rate, okay? And the bones are soft. The bones have calcium, they have vitamin D, there's magnesium, like all these underconsumed nutrients in one place. And if you don't eat fatty fish and you don't supplement EPA and DHA, you're not getting exposure to these wonderfully unique compounds. And people want to talk about like mitochondria health and all that stuff. Well, one of the few components we know influences the mitochondria are omega-3s. So if you're saying the words mitochondria, in any sort of way, I hope that you get omega-3s in it, because we have real evidence that they integrate into the membrane of the mitochondria and make them work more efficiently, which is why mitochondria, liver health, people who have more omega-3s, they have a lower risk of fatty liver, et cetera, right? So let's say sardines, beans, it has to be artichoke for vegetables, because again, artichoke is under, it's like people don't really like, they look at it, first of all, it's very hard to work with. Okay, cool. Get it jarred, drain it, pan fry it with seasoning, and you're ready to go. Artichoke is very good for the gut bacteria. It's one of the highest vegetables in magnesium. It's one of the highest foods in polyphenols, which, if for anyone who doesn't know what they are, they're special plant-based compounds where everywhere we look, when people have more of them, we see better outcomes, right? They're high in specific types of other compounds called flavonoids, which we see good evidence that they protect the liver. So they're very unique and they're not widely consumed. So, if we pick those three, get a can of sardines, get a can of beans, get a jar of artichoke, drain them, throw them together, season them, and you have a meal that would change someone's life if they ate it every day. That's just the fact of the matter. You do nothing else but eat that meal every day. You've just rectified vitamin D deficiency, a lack of omega-3 exposure. You've closed the fiber gap. You've exposed yourself to a large amount of polyphenol compounds. You're feeding your healthy gut bacteria. It's like, So anyway, that's my ramp. I'm gonna pick those three.
Nice.
Although I could go on, but
I
what
know.
about yourself? What do you like? What's on your what would you pick for that same question?
Yeah.
You don't have to use my obviously, and you already know this. You don't have to use my criteria, right? You have your own criteria, but.
Yep. Yep. I'll list a few of my foods that I'll list, but I think the people I want that to sit with them to just like appreciate that, okay, cool. We have this type of legume that really doesn't have its own single ingredient. I mean, you could get kidney beans, you could get all, refried beans, even, you could get black beans, and then not to mention all these legumes and everything else that kind of can fit into this classification of beans and legumes. So I think even within that scope alone, you have so many different options that you could mix or match or add to different recipes or whatever the case may be, and have a different type of experience with the beans that you're eating. Sardines, I laugh because I agree with you. Sardines, I think, are probably one of the more underconsumed type of fish. Even I don't eat enough of them. I had a infant and toddler expert feeder on the show, and one of her like superfoods, I guess we could say, was like introducing sardines to kids at a very young age, so we can kind of appreciate that flavor
There you
profile. But
go.
they're also very nutrient dense, and It's amazing to see how quick kids can respond to some of these profiles. Even if you, as the adult, don't like it, exposing that to children and kids at a young age could make a huge difference in their growth, development, their, pickiness, like their ability to eat food consistently. But sardines, I find, are a really good one. And again, salmon, and there's other, fatty fish that you could get. But the sardines for the bang for your buck are pretty undefeated. And artichokes too, like you can mix those in your pasta or in your salads or in your sheet pans, or you can just get a pressure cooker and cook those fuckers in like 15 minutes if you really want to. So I feel like there's so many ways that you can pair those foods together, but also repurpose them and use them in a bunch of different meals that, yeah, I just don't know if people are always taking advantage of necessarily.
Yeah, no, they aren't. Like, statistically speaking, they aren't. And you only have to ask yourself, like, up to this point, when you being anyone, like, how many sardines, how many beans, how many artichokes have you had in the last several months? Right.
Yeah, a lot of
And
people
they're not for
haven't eaten none.
everyone. It's not for everyone. That's cool. There's always a plan B, right? Because guess what? Like, the next closest thing to artichoke is probably asparagus or broccoli seasoned with parsley and oregano. Like, that replicates what artichoke does. Probably asparagus specifically. So there's always a plan A, B, C. Right. Again, that's what we do. Plan A doesn't work. We go to plan B. We go to plan C. We make it work,
Yeah.
right? Maybe, you're not willing to eat fatty fish at all. Maybe we supplement and we focus on as much protein diversity so we can get with what remains.
Totally.
That's the joy of the game.
Totally. Well said,
I
dude.
probably put green tea and cocoa powder in there too, just to like give something a little bit more fun. Just because they're kind of like easy, no effort. You can throw cocoa powder and stuff. You can go get a green tea or put like, some green tea matcha powder and stuff. And they just have really like microbiome mo modifying properties. Like, we see some evidence like cocoa improves blood flow. Like, and again, it's not to say, like, I call them luxury. I don't know if I used this term with you last time. I call them luxury considerations. Like, literally and figuratively, it's like you can live a great life and never have green tea or dark chocolate, but equally, we have pretty good evidence that they're going to make a net benefit to your body. And if you can fit them in with no effort and you're of the mind that you want to spice things up, you want to optimize, so to speak, those are great places to look, because green tea and dark chocolate, what they have is related to each other, but not really found anywhere else. And the funny thing is, the closest thing to green tea and dark chocolate, besides like other types of tea, like black tea, like apples have a little bit of what green tea and dark chocolate have in terms of the flavonoid compounds. So there you go. There's a conventional fruit that's not sexy, but hey, wait a minute. We're seeing it as some of the same compounds as like cocoa powder and green tea. Okay, that's cool.
It is cool. Yeah, I like where your head goes with a lot of this stuff. I think when I think of superfoods and when I think of things, yeah, I like your definition of it, where it's like, what are unique and something that maybe a population doesn't eat a lot of or doesn't appreciate as
Right.
much. I think the list is pretty endless. I want to reinforce some of the other foods that people might be eating consistently that
Sure.
maybe they do relatively well, but maybe you could do better. Or if that's something that you enjoy, you can double down on those. But berries are always the one that come up for me. I'd like, blueberries are probably one of my favorites. I think raspberries probably have more fiber per cup if we compare certain berries together. But if we talk about the antioxidants and the just like everyone's all about inflammation and mitochondrial health, but like we look at like the anti-inflammatory effects of berries and a lot of plant compounds in general, just like berries are so accessible. They're relatively inexpensive. You can get them frozen. And I think there's so many ways you can add them, whether you're eating it like Andy for dessert, or you put it in a smoothie, you put it in an acai bowl, or you just heat it up and add it to oats or a parfait, or just eating them on their own. Like there's so many ways you can get blueberries in, or just berries in general, that it might be something that you're rotating through different berries, but if that's your fruit of choice, like I think that's wonderful. So berries are always on the list for me. Cruciferous vegetables are ones just because I tend to enjoy them. I think you look at broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts. We've been on a big kick recently, and they're in that sheet pan kind of frozen package that we've been buying recently. But like we look at the fiber, we look at like the detoxification system around like your liver and just how they can help with your bowels and your good gut bacteria, but also just your body's detoxification systems. Like cruciferous vegetables are kind of undefeated as well. And I still don't think people eat
Agreed.
enough of those either. Like
Yeah.
I think about like the veggies that a lot of people buy and stuff that I'm looking at in food logs. And it's like, those are probably the most inexpensive things you can buy in bulk or buy frozen that you can reheat that don't take a lot of effort, that there's a lot of ways you can dress up and with a lot of different meals that you could pair it with them that could just give you an advantage over just eating like a Caesar salad, right? Or something like that.
Right.
So I find that like the cruciferous veggies for me are a big one. And then, dude, olive oil and garlic are the other two that, like, we talk about Mediterranean
Oh,
diets and
yeah.
blue zones and everything, but man, garlic is sick. Like, there's just so many things you could add it to, even just eating the cloves. Like, of course, it's not going to be on the low FODMAPs diet, but if you can tolerate
Right.
garlic and it's something that you can incorporate into your food, same with like the olive oil. I find that the combination of those, monounsaturated fats and antioxidants and all of the plant compounds that you get and the impacts it might have on your blood pressure and just your vascular health. Like those things in general, you mix with your cruciferous vegetables or you mix with your soups or your stews or add them to your broccoli or your sardines and artichokes. It's like you start to realize that like, oh, there's a lot of different combinations and there's really an infinite amount of kind of like things that we could put together to, again, make it taste different, but to get most bang for our buck from the foods that we might be cooking at home.
No, 100%. No, it's funny. I'll throw this out there too, just for fun, because I always like to look at the like more the complex angles of stuff. So I'm seeing like some good evidence, more and more evidence that so olive oil, obviously butter is it becomes a topical issue now because there's a lot of the animal beside, but olive oil, which is high in monounsaturated fats, I think as you mentioned, it stimulates a greater GLP-1 release in the intestines. So that's fun, kind of fun, right? Among this, and that's like even if the reverse was true. Olive oil still has the properties are way more favorable. Also, because take the average person, are they being overexposed to like monounsaturated fats and polyphenols, or are they being overexposed to dairy and saturated fat? Some of that stuff is it's not that it's bad. It's just what have you been exposed to in your life? Like how much of that of one have you had versus the other? And there's likely a balance for you to overcorrect, right? Like nutrition's a game of averages, and I think that's also helpful to look at, and that's why variety, is important and so on. So.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. Yeah. And I just think about someone listening who's like deep in the carnivore camp and they wouldn't have listened this far into this episode anyway,
For
because we didn't
sure.
talk about fiber too much. But like, they're sitting over here and it's like, oh yeah, saturated fat is essential and it's better for you and yada yada yada. But it's like, what does the human literature say? And consistently when we look at meta-analyses, we look at control trials, we look at people who are making these arguments that lectins are killing you, that are in your vegetables and all this shit. It's like, what does the human outcome say in a lot of these, trials that we're looking at with all of these fiber sources or these individual nutrients? And overwhelmingly, the literature completely stands in favor of consuming more plant compounds and more foods that are high in antioxidants, high in fiber, or higher in these plant polyphenols. Even if they have some of these lectins or anti-nutrients, it's like the iron and the calcium and the magnesium and the potassium that you get from these foods far outweigh any small potential like detriment that some of these people might be claiming. And I find that, again, in a world today where people are always telling you what not to eat, I find that conversations like this, where we're encouraging people to expand their horizons, almost appreciate food with a different light and look at the things that you can get from the food rather than the things you're not getting from eating certain foods. I find that that alone, that switch in people's minds can make such a big difference on their quality of life, their stress levels, and also, again, their enjoyment with food. And then you pair all those things together, you bet your ass those people will have probably better health outcomes, better success with weight loss, better success with controlling their blood pressure, better body composition, better energy and mood, better recovery and performance in the gym, all things that we want to improve on. Like incorporating a lot more of these foods more consistently is probably going to be the biggest bang for your buck. So I'm happy we had this conversation because I do think it is missed in the health and fitness space, and you don't really hear that often anymore.
No, 100%. I mean, it's all there's always a touch of a cost benefit analysis with stuff. I'll use a fun analogy because you talk about lectins or like people like to point out this one thing in a specific group and say it's like kind of having like a best friend or a partner and like you've had them in your life for an extended period and you're very confident they're a net benefit to your life. And then you see an Instagram video saying don't be friends with someone who has this trait. Maybe you have a friend who's great in every area, but they show up late to stuff. Okay, so like realistically, cost benefit wise, their contribution to their life, right? How you gonna evaluate that? Do you drop them because of one trait? I mean, obviously, if something's a deal breaker, like if there's poison amounts of lead or some other compound, whatever. That's not a great example, probably given the timely nature of that protein powder stuff. But so that's a way to look at it, right? Do you drop someone because of one bad thing, or like do you look at them for the 15 good things? Where inevitably almost everything in life, including nutrition, works on a cost benefit analysis and like what is like do the advantages outweigh the disadvantages, right? And that's another way to look at it.
Yep. Well said, dude. Well said. I know. Leave it to us to not get to all of our topics today, but
Next,
like you
let's do the
said,
case. Next time, we'll do the case study.
I
Honestly, maybe
love
do one
that.
or two
Yeah,
case
we'll have a
studies.
couple case studies.
No, we gotta do it again.
I think that will be a fun way to kind of wrap a lot of these things together because the thing with like podcasts and conversations like this is we get so excited to talk about particular things, but again, I think when we can apply that to somebody's life, and I think we did a really good job of that today, to be honest with you. But when we can kind of look at somebody on paper and acknowledge like, what are the low-hanging fruits? What are things they're not doing well? What are things they are doing well that we want to turn the knobs up on a little bit? Like, and we can kind of see how all of these things fit together. I think that is when it clicks in people's mind a little bit more. But even then, like all of these topics we talk about today, I know people can apply to their own life and start to appreciate what am I doing well? What am I not? And how can I start to just make a difference in my life with some of the information that I'm learning and retaining and putting that towards a brighter future. Really, that's what this is all about, is how can we use health to your advantage to make your next year better? I mean, you bring up Atia, right? But like your lifespan and your health span together, how can we improve both of those? And that's why I love having you on the show, because we get to have some of those more complex, nuanced topics. But I will try and get you on within the next few months and we can kind of build on this
Sounds good,
conversation
man.
today. But thank you for spending a little extra time. As always, I'll plug your stuff in the show notes, but do your podcast outro stuff and we'll schedule a time for the future.
Thanks for having me, Luke. Yeah, it was great. I mean, honestly, like I said at the beginning, I think we have good conversations. Because you have the knowledge, but you're also probably you're do better job of me of bringing it back to like real life and bringing it practical. And I think that that brings the best out of me. It challenges me in a way that in a different way, right? Which I love. So great chat. I look forward to the next one. And yeah, hopefully everyone enjoyed it.
Sounds good, bro. Thank you, Andy. Appreciate you,
All
bro.
right, peace.
Thank you again for listening to this episode. If you found value and enjoyed it, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media. If you do, make sure you tag me so I can say thanks. Or if you're on iTunes, scrolling down and leaving a 5-star review would be much appreciated. And if you ever want to get in touch with me, you can always find me on Instagram at LukeSmithRD. Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. I'll see you on the next episode.